Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Kia ora, welcome to Eco Living in Action. Now, I'm Maureen Howard, a host of this show. And yeah, I'll just say that was a lovely little bit of music that we had on there to remind me of the old country where I grew up. And but for today's show, I've been reflecting, and I think that it's every now and again, it's a good thing to revisit our closely held assumptions and beliefs. And I'm saying this because back in the late 90s, along with many other people, I supported the GE-free movement to keep genetically modified crops from being commercially grown in New Zealand. And it's been 20 years since, and so far there's been no crops grown here. And the science has moved on, however, and gene editing is the new buzzword. So what's new? What is gene editing? And are our concerns about genetic engineering just as valid? So today, live in the studio, I've got Philippa Jemison, who's editor of Organic New Zealand magazine that's published by Soil and Health New Zealand, who are an incorporated society and registered charity that promotes organics and sustainable living. And they've been keeping abreast of GE and have continued to steadfastly oppose it. So welcome to the show, Philippa.
Kia ora, thank you.
Yeah, kia ora. So, Philippa, now, look, let's just get stuck in because this is a huge topic, you know. And so first thing, you know, I mentioned that we haven't got any crops growing here. Now, can you just clarify that for us?
Okay, so in 1999, when the Green Party got into Parliament and they had a deal with Labor to have a moratorium on genetically engineered organisms in the environment, anything, whether it be crops, animals or whatever, until the Royal Commission could do its work and be heard and hear people and what they thought. So the moratorium lasted through until 2003, and then it was released. Now, a lot of people think we still have the moratorium, but we don't. So according to our laws, anybody could apply to grow GE crops or release GE animals or whatever into the wider environment. But so far, nobody has actually applied to do that commercially. There have been a number of tests. There's been trials of GE crops such as onions and brassicas around Lincoln. There's currently only a couple of outdoor GE trials, and one is of animals up near Hamilton, cattle, sheep and goats, and the other main one is around Rotorua of GE pine trees. So they're the only GE organisms actually in the environment, but they're in a you know, restricted field trials sort of thing with a lot of conditions.
Mm. Yeah. So do you think that it's the that the system is working to, I guess, be restrictive enough, and that anything that's unsafe is not getting out there? Or do you think that it's
I think so. I think that it's been really good to have this cautionary approach, and because there are still a lot of things that we don't know about how genetically engineered organisms behave and replicate. So, yeah, I think it's best to keep it in the lab at the moment. And there are a lot of university and Crown Research Institutes experimenting with, say, you know, GE microorganisms and so on. And that's fine, that's in containment. And so they can find things out.
Right, yes. Yeah. So it's not stopping research in that way.
I mean, it's I guess it's, you know, it's putting a cautionary approach, certainly more cautionary than some other countries have.
Yeah. And as a result, I think, you know, we've missed a lot of the kind of mistakes, the things that are happening overseas, you know, in terms of, you know, some crops getting into the wild and becoming, I guess, super pests, super, you know, in terms of canola, I'm thinking. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is a problem because canola, for example, is a brassica, which brassicas are notoriously promiscuous and they cross-pollinate all over the place and with different, you know, brassicas. So, yeah, potentially if canola seed got out, GE canola seed, and contaminated existing canola and other brassica species. Yeah, we don't know what the consequences of that might be, you know, on soil microorganisms, on the existing crops that we have.
Okay, so I think, you know, I mentioned it in my introduction, so we'll just, let's get the, you know, the facts right. So what is gene editing then, and how does it different from genetic engineering?
Okay, well, I prefer to use the term genetic engineering as opposed to genetic modification. Well, let's talk about that first, because genetic engineering is very specific. It's very clear that it's done by humans in a lab. It can't happen in nature. And that usually to date has involved inserting DNA of some type, whether it be from the same species or a different species, into an organism. Genetic modification people use sometimes to mean genetic engineering, but sometimes they use it to, you know, they say, oh, we've been genetically modifying our food for millennia. Well, actually, okay, we've been selectively breeding plants and animals for millennia, but we haven't been engineering them in a lab by putting DNA in, you know. So just to sort of clarify that. Now, gene editing is kind of like the GE 2.0, if you like. It's people call it a more precise way of genetic engineering, in that they say, okay, we're just going into the DNA and we're nipping this bit out, or we're turning this thing off in DNA. So it is purported to be very precise. Actually, the thing is that even though you think you're only doing one little thing, that has a whole lot of ramifications on the DNA that we don't even know about. And I mean, in some cases, you know, scientists are not looking for these unexpected changes. They're unexpected. There were mice genes, for example, that were gene edited, and there were hundreds of unexpected changes that, you know, the scientists hadn't bargained on. So I really think that it's just as unknown and just as unpredictable as the earlier forms of genetic engineering.
It reminds me, you know, because I used to work at the Otago Polytechnic and teach animal behaviour, and I had a graph that showed the amount of experimentation that had been done on animals and how it had fallen, and then suddenly with our introduction of doing research into genetic engineering, that it had jumped up again because, you know, over the years we'd been replacing animal studies with other methods, and then it's increased again. So I guess that's one factor, I guess, that has happened, has increased. But to think about some others then, so, you know, just thinking about, you know, is GE still important for New Zealand, do you think?
Important in what way?
GE free, I mean, sorry.
I think so.
Just having that status, because we are a little separate country, and it's something.
It's most certainly helpful for our export markets. It goes along with our clean green image. I mean, you know, that is arguably getting a bit tarnished, but people do really value that. Markets do value that. They want organic. They want healthy. They want GE free. They want antibiotic free. They, you know, they want grass fed. They want all, you know, all of these good things that are, you know, healthy and, I guess a known quantity of health too, rather than an unknown.
So this economic argument, you know, of our having our, you know, clean green status. A big, big part of that is, or a good sizable proportion, it'd be interesting to know, is actually kind of the idea that the food that we are producing is free of GE.
Well, there are potentially other markets that we can be tapping into. Just last week, I read about in France and Germany, farmers have had to pull up about 11,000 hectares of GE rapeseed or canola. There was contamination, and it was only 0.05% or something of this rapeseed was contaminated with GE rapeseed.
Ah, so it is.
Now, in those countries and in those areas, then they're prohibited from growing GE crops, and they had to rip it up.
How do you think it got in there?
Well, this is the question, and the company that sold it is Bayer, who has bought Monsanto. The seed was originally a Monsanto seed line, and Bayer is having to compensate these farmers to probably the tune of about 20 million euros for lost income, and they can't plant crops again the next season because there's a possibility someone's missed. The seed apparently came from a GE-free area of Argentina. There's a lot of GE crops grown in Argentina, but it's a big country. Now, Bayer's saying they may not source the seed from there anymore. Well, New Zealand is actually a seed producer. We've got a really good reputation for producing high-quality seed in New Zealand. You know, maybe there's some areas that we can get into.
Oh, and so our that's GE-free, a potential market.
Our GE-free status means that that's possible.
Right, yeah. Right, okay. And I guess and the other thing that, you know, way back 20 years ago when people were campaigning against GE was just this ownership issue of, you know, there was talk about the Terminator gene and just the whole idea of ownership and patenting of a particular life form. Is that still a big concern?
Yes, it is. I think people are really opposed to the idea that farmers and gardeners, home gardeners for that matter, would not be able to save their own seed. And people who are into organic NZ magazine and all of our philosophies, they're really into heirloom crops, heritage crops. There's all these wonderful old varieties that have incredible nutritional properties, are biodiverse and appropriate for different areas to grow. They've got fantastic properties. And what's happening with commercial seed breeding is, you know, there's been a lot of varieties lost. It's the big companies are focusing on money. They're not looking at nutrition. They're not looking at shelf. They are looking at shelf life, but yeah, they're not looking at a whole lot of other things that home gardeners might value and farmers might value too, to be able to save their own seed rather than having to pay every year to buy new seed.
And to be dependent.
That's right. And particularly in third world countries, that's a real problem because the farmers get locked into these contracts and they can't save their own seed. You know, and they have to buy the GE seed and they have to buy the pesticides that are sold along with it as part of the package.
Yeah. And, you know, you were just talking there about the biodiversity, you know, of the genetic stock. And we are, like, how's it going to be? You know, we're moving into a world where there's more climate change. It's unpredictable. The future is so unpredictable. So
we need to have all the diversity that we've got and nurture the diversity we have, because there'll be, you know, a lot of these old heirloom species are really quite resilient, and even so the heritage breeds of animals too are often quite, resistant to internal parasites and that kind of thing. You know, we need to be preserving these old and heirloom breeds and crops, yeah.
And one thing we can do is we can preserve them freely, without paying for it.
That's
and
right.
And we can share our seeds freely.
Yeah.
And I think
they're part of the commons. We, you know, generations, millennia of farmers have worked, generation after generation to build up these different species.
Yeah. So, you know, to some extent, when I'm listening to you, it's, in part, there's the unknownness of GE, and as you say, you know, we don't know all of the ramifications of if you take one gene out and put another one in. But there's also just it's the whole political and economic landscape into which GE has ended up being put into. You know, perhaps if it had been started in a different way or we had a different kind of system, you know, it could be quite different, couldn't it? Would you say that? You know, like in terms of, at the moment, the research, like the work is being done in and being sold through multinationals. You know,
well, there is, you know, there are universities and government-funded organisations around the world that are also engaged in GE research. You know, I mean, they're supposed to be involved in public good science, and I guess they're investigating that as a potential public good. But I just think there's actually no need for GE. There really isn't. We've got all these wonderful existing crops and species, and we can selectively breed them for good traits that we can bring on. And New Zealand is very good at that, at selective breeding.
But people say the opposite, Philippa, because they say, you know, we need to feed the world, and as though it has to be, the answer has to come from the laboratory. So you're saying differently, aren't you?
Yes, indeed. Well, that feed the world argument unfortunately doesn't stack up, because at the moment at least 60, if not 70% of the world is already feeding themselves through small-scale subsistence agriculture in the third world, or even in the first world. They talk about yields of GE crops being higher than conventional or organic. From the reading that I've done, I've seen that to be the case in some cases, but then perhaps not in the long term. So if you go and look at Rodale, the Rodale Institute, which is an organic organisation in the US that's been conducting a 30-year or more trial of sort of like side-by-side conventional and organic, and they've also been comparing it with GE about yields and so on. In the long term, you know, organic and regenerative sustainable agriculture does better. They do better in drought years. They do better in, you know, in all the extremes of drought and flood. It's much better to be organic, regenerative, to not have to rely on pesticides and GE seed. More resilient.
I think that this is just our problem. We tend to look at this short-term thinking and looking for what's next year's crop going to be like, you know, and that's what we're thinking, and instead of looking after the soil. And if we don't have soil, and good soil today, we're not going to have good soil in 5 years if we keep on.
Well, that's our motto: healthy soil, healthy food, healthy people.
This is right, yes. Okay, so look, we're not growing commercial crops here in New Zealand currently. Some food that comes into the country, or some aspects of food that come into the country, do have GE. Could you just list that out for us? So if people want to avoid it and eating it, how can they do that?
Yes, unfortunately, there are a lot of GE ingredients entering our food supply coming from overseas. So probably the main four are canola, corn or maize, cottonseed, and yes, it is in foods, I've got a mental blank on the fourth one. It'll come to me. Soy.
Yes.
Now, these are in a lot of things. If you read the ingredients, there might be soy oil or corn oil or something in a lot of processed things that are, you know, your pasta sauce or, you know, some sauce mix or salad dressing or ice cream or biscuits or bread or, you know, any number of processed foods. You know, there's a high proportion of them. If they're not organic or certified organic, they could well have GE ingredients. And our labelling laws have loopholes big enough to drive trucks through. I mean, you'll barely see any labels that say this contains GE ingredients.
Which would be an immediate kind of deterrent for people to buy it.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I would say buy organic wherever you can, grow your own, and New Zealand products, and just eat less processed food, and you'll be healthier anyway.
Right, yes. But if you kind of stick to the unprocessed stuff, or as you say, buy organic, then you should be fairly safe.
But look for the oils. Often it's oils. And even if it says vegetable oil, you don't know what kind of oil it is. It could well be canola, could well be soy, could well be genetically engineered. You just don't know. You could ask the company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going to the restaurant. No, there's different laws around there, isn't there?
Restaurants, cafes, fast food outlets, they don't have to label for GE. Yeah, so, you know, ask them what oil are they cooking their chips in, you know? Is it canola oil? Because a lot of them switched from beef fat to, you know, vegetable oils of some kind. Yeah, I mean, even just your crisps, a lot of them have vegetable oil. You don't know what it is.
That's right.
Sunflower oil's all right.
Right, yeah. So anyway, have a
look. Olive oil's good.
Yeah. So your vision, Philippa, for the future?
My vision for the future is a healthy, thriving, organic, resilient Aotearoa New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah.
With food for everybody and a thriving ecosystem.
Yeah, and growing our own food, community gardens. Yeah. So I guess that's one of the nice things about growing your own food is you know exactly what's been done to it.
Yeah.
Right. So, so have you anything interesting coming up?
Well, next week we've got the new issue of Organic NZ coming out on the newsstands. That's the March-April issue. And we've got heaps of wonderful things in there. We've got how to grow, harvest and dry your own beans, like for seed for dried beans, so you can...
Coming to that time of the year.
Yeah, and I did an experiment with runner bean seed, and you can soak it and cook it like kidney beans or chickpeas or whatever other dried bean.
Ah.
So that's something we can do here in Dunedin.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. We've got all sorts of things. We've got soil assessment for the home garden. We've got a revival of our heritage orchard. We've got what are your tea bags made of? How many tea bags have plastic in them?
It's getting everywhere, this plastic.
Yeah. Mm. We've got a woman who did a 30-day juice cleanse and healed herself of an ovarian cyst. Yeah, we've got multiplicity of things.
That's great. That's what I love about Organic New Zealand, yes. And thank you very, very much. And if people want to get your magazine, where's the best place?
You can buy it in shops. It's about 500 retail outlets nationwide. Or we have a digital issue. Or go onto our website, which is www.organicnz.org.nz.
That's great. Thank you very much, Philippa, for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Yep. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Maureen Howard, and this is Eco Living in Action. And on today's show, I've been interviewing Philippa Jameson from Organic New Zealand magazine about GE. And we're just having a re-look at GE and thinking that maybe it's not such a good idea to be growing it in New Zealand. So, phew, thank goodness we aren't at the moment, commercially. So, if you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast from oar.org.nz. Thanks very much to Sustainable Dunedin City for their support. And I hope to catch you next week.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. As they affect our city, Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability-related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to Sustainable Dunedin City. .org.nz.
I don't always know just what to say, and I am not a master at playing these love games. Imperfect person is my real name. It's nice to meet you. Could you love me anyway? Lying awake, thinking about the morning light. Will you rise to kiss my face, or will you pick a fight? Sometimes though you smile, the question is in your eyes. Are we just surviving, or baby, can we thrive? perfect person is my real name. It's nice to meet you, but you love me anyway. My heart's still alive, talking to you and no one else. And I know I was right to lay you in my heart and hers. Sometimes though you smile, the question is in your eyes. Just surviving, or baby, can we thrive? I don't know just what to say, and I'm not a master at playing these love games. Imperfect person is my real name. It's nice to meet you, but you love me.
Your everything and